Previously on Popping Collars.
What about you, John? What made you think I can do this? If everybody else is doing this, I can do this.
Well, actually, it was you.
Yes.
If Greg can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, right.
No, well, well, you know what?
John, I have a T-shirt. I agree with that.
Is it a Philippians 4:13 T-shirt?
I think it is. If Greg can do it, I can do it.
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture. I am your host. My name is Greg Knight. I am in Palm Beach, Florida. With me are my co-hosts, Betsy Gonzalez from Alexandria, Virginia. Hello, Betsy.
Hey, Greg.
And Liz Easton from Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome Yay! Back, Liz.
Thank you. It's so good to be back.
Liz, who? What?
Now, who's that?
And our special guest from Boston, Massachusetts, it's Edwin Johnson. Thanks for coming on, Edwin.
Oh, my pleasure. Excited to bring the heat from Boston.
Yeah. This is episode 49 of the something ranked podcast, I don't know, in the iTunes spirituality category. And our topic today is pop culture nostalgia. Okay, guys, so here are some actual shows that are premiering this year on television. Lethal Weapon, a MacGyver reboot, The Exorcist, a Westworld reboot, and that's just television. There are a lot of pop culture franchises right now looking to cash in on your nostalgia for a certain time or feeling or emotion or whatever. So I'm curious, Betsy, what's something that's pushed your memory buttons lately in the popular culture?
We talked a little bit earlier about the nostalgia factor in Stranger Things. And that,
oh yeah,
that little Netflix series, just it hits all of the 80s movie tropes, like down to the music and the opener, the visuals, the kid factor with like little kids solving crime like Goonies, and then you've got like the dark teen factor like Heathers.
Little John Carpenter monster movie thrown in there.
Yeah, the monster movie factor. It's just, and all the little things that are perfect about it, like the commercials that they show are perfect. The ones that they pull back, just this is 1983.
What about you, Liz? What's something? What's a reboot or a reimagining that's hit you in the warm fuzzies?
Well, gosh, I don't know if it'd be warm fuzzies. I totally agree with Betsy that Stranger Things was awesome. And that was a great kind of different take on nostalgia because it wasn't a reboot, which is happening so much right now. But I was totally sucked into the People versus O.J. Simpson. I know. And I thought it was just a great show. It was really, really well done. But what was interesting to me is that almost all of the dialogue came directly, especially once they got into the courtroom. Almost all of the dialogue was directly just court reporting. So it was a dramatization of things that everybody watched in real time. And there was very little editorializing. So if you were watching it, you knew exactly what was going to happen. And if you were a real like crime buff, you really knew what was about to happen. But it just took off. And I think it's just kind of an odd concept to basically not create any original dialogue for half of the series, tell people a story that they already know really well, and just see what happens. It was great. But can I say a word about MacGyver really quickly?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Okay. I didn't really know this was happening until you and I talked on the phone the other day. But I just want to shout out that MacGyver was like my legit first crush.
Really?
Yeah, like not even first like... But first, like, I don't know why I feel this way. Like, that kind of crush. Like, I had a real crush on MacGyver.
Was it the mullet? Was it the...
He was a little rugged. Like, I think he was a little rugged, and I liked that. Still do. And he was super nice. He was always like helping people. And he could like fix things with duct tape, which is a very appealing quality to me to this day.
That may be a little too warm.
Is that too much information?
You're taking the warm fuzzy thing a little far.
No, I'm just being real. I know you guys missed me. You missed that about me. I know.
What about you, Edwin? What's something old that's new again for you?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm glad that Liz mentioned MacGyver because I was a huge MacGyver fan, and my wife, much like Liz, my wife Susan, she was also super duper into MacGyver.
Yeah, Susan.
What is going on? I'm pretty cool, but you know, if the original MacGyver ever comes out, like, you know, she's dropping me like it's hot. So it's hilarious. So the craziest thing is that, you know, last night I performed our evening service. And then after putting our son down, we actually watched the new MacGyver episode. And we were both super excited about it. And while a part of me is sort of glad that Lucas Till, the, you know, the new MacGyver actor, doesn't quite do it for my wife the way the old guy does, you know, less competition, I guess. You know, it's interesting. We actually had really different reactions to it. You know, for her, you know, she liked the fact that, you know, it had really poor special effects and that it was really slow and, you know, kind of wasn't into the fact that everything seemed so modern in this new one. And so for her, she actually was really disappointed in the way that the show came out. Whereas for me, you know, I thought it was dope that they're putting a new spin on things. And I enjoyed it. You know, in general, I mean, for me as a big fan of music, I mean, I'm used to remixes. You know, I'm used to hearing things that, you know, were played 20, 30 years ago, maybe before I was born, and then hearing them again in a new way. So for me, you know, I guess I'm used to that feeling of, you know, something both catching my nostalgia and then also, you know, giving me something a little new and different. And, you know, sometimes I actually like the remix better.
My thing is actually not a television show or a movie, and it's not even out yet, actually. It's Nintendo is putting out the classic NES system from like the late 80s. And it's like this
cartridges one, like,
yeah, the old cartridge one, the old, you know, Super Mario Brothers, Tecmo Bowl, all of that stuff.
That was the only one we ever had. That was it.
Well, they're re-releasing one that's, it's $50 and it comes preloaded with like 40 games on it. It's funny, all that stuff, like just looking at the names of the games, I could remember like what my fingers were supposed to do. In order to like get through, like I had like muscle memory like in my hands, like just looking at the different games on display. It's amazing like how ingrained some of this stuff is in you. Like you can just sort of play it in your head. It just seems like there's this huge influx of this stuff. And maybe there's always been like reboots and stuff like that. I guess that there have been, but it really feels like things like Jurassic World. I mean, we already talked about Star Wars on this show and like how it sort of followed beat for beat what it was that we really loved about the first, you know, a trilogy of Star Wars movies. Like, is there something about nostalgia that's problematic somehow? You know, I mean, it just feels like it's a good way to sort of get stuck in thinking, oh man, things used to be so great.
This summer when Pokemon Go came out, right? So I didn't grow up playing Pokemon and so didn't really have a strong nostalgia factor to that. Actually, just the other day, my daughter has said, can you get me Yu-Gi-Oh cards? I want to get Yu-Gi-Oh. And I'm like, this is all things I don't understand. But if you all remember when Pokemon Go came out and everybody's like all over it, right? And the comments on Facebook were, don't let Pokemon Go distract you from what's really going on in the world. You know, you're all walking around with your faces in your phone. It's whatever's going on. There are black men dying. There are people being shot in discotheques. This nostalgia is blinding you in comfort to what is actually going on. Don't tap out. And I completely understand wanted to just crawl into the pillow fort of nostalgia and just be like, that's it. I'm out, you know, and I can't stay in. I'm burned out. I'm tired. How do I continue to be emotional and empathetic and and be tapped in all the time. It's become too much.
Well, and I wonder what it is about our generation that people that now they're marketing nostalgia toward. Like it's kind of like exactly our ages. And that could be, I guess, because we're demographically the big profit generators, you know, for entertainment, and are getting to a place of also being content creators across the board, directors and producers and writers and whatever. What's interesting to me is like the pop culture of the 90s wasn't very good. So what? Well, okay, I'm sorry. Friends? I mean, some of it was.
Friends?
Friends was great.
You but are? I'm thinking
Fuller House is a particularly weird one to me. Like Full House was a terrible TV show. Its only value is that we grew up watching it.
And John Stamos.
Well,
John
Stamos, oh, absolutely. Uncle Jesse.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I'm lost in a MacGyver like.
Hasn't aged today. Dorian Gray.
It's another mullet, Liz.
Maybe it's the mullet. Do you think?
Sorry, back to your point.
Okay, I'm coming back. But I wonder sort of, you know, why us, why that generation? And I also wonder what happens to when so much of our pop culture is consumed by nostalgia, which it really does feel like unprecedented. It's an awful lot. What then happens to creativity, to innovation, telling new stories, interpreting our times right now? And maybe the interpretation is simply we're freaked out right now. And we're longing for a simpler time.
I followed a truck today on my way home from work that had a Ronald Reagan 1984 bumper sticker, wow, like a new one in the back, wow, window of their truck. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that's kind of what we're talking about. It's funny. Like, it's this idea of I can't handle something about the world today, so I'm going to wrap myself in what I think I remember I really liked.
I think nostalgia can be bad. I think it can be something that puts us in a place where we're not moving. And I also think that, you know, skillful artists and writers and preachers are actually really good at using our nostalgia as a hook to bring us to a new place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think of so many times where we're sort of given images or sequences that we're used to that remind us of something else. And then when it's spun a different way, then all of a sudden we're actually able to inhabit the moment better because it's paired with something that makes us comfortable. So, I mean, I think that if it's used right, it can actually be a really neat thing. I mean, back to sort of thinking popular culture, you know, for me, the Creed movie was sort of an interesting example of that. In that you have something that, you know, captures a lot of the same things that, you know, the original Rocky movie did. But, you know, all of a sudden it's a brother. And, you know, it had a different flavor because of that. And, you know, that same belovedness was now sort of surrounding him. I mean, that's just an example where I feel like, you know, so many nostalgic diehards would be drawn in. And all of a sudden they find themselves wrapped up in a really different character. You know, as long as you give people enough, or at least a taste of what they had before, that you can actually move with them.
Edwin, what you said just now made me think of liturgy as a whole. Like, one of the things that people love about our Episcopal liturgy, and I'm sure that this is true in other liturgical traditions, is that so often it feels like coming home. It's comfortable, it's known, it's beloved, it takes us to a deeper place, a pathway that we know how to get to a deeper place. And sometimes people criticize that, I think, saying like, oh, that's rote, that's stale, it's not current or whatever. But the fact is that if we use that liturgy well to glorify God, you know, first and foremost, and to bring people into a closer relationship with Christ, we can actually find ways to be super current and even subversive and, you know, speak to this moment and this time using ancient ways of worship, which I guess for some of us is nostalgic.
Yeah.
Well, and even now, if you're really talking about groups of young adults who are even younger than we are, friends, that they are really interested in the mystery.
Well, I wonder if there is Yeah, if there is something really just human about it. One of the headlines that I saw when I Googled really quickly nostalgia in pop culture was an article I didn't read from NPR that was something like, stop trying to figure out the mysterious nature of nostalgia. Like, stop trying to figure it out. And yeah, so it made me wonder, like, is it just like a human thing, like in our little lizard brains that we want to go back and always go back?
Yeah. So when Liz said that Edwin's statement made her think of liturgy, it made me think of parables and how Jesus would sort of take the ideas of sort of, okay, well, this is something that you see every day. So let me figure out a way to take this something that you see every day and figure out how to explain something to you. And it strikes me that like what we all share, whether we like it or not, right, is what's in our television, what's in our living rooms, what's on our television sets. What's the water cooler talk is entertainment talk for a lot of us. And so, you know, this is sort of an extension. This nostalgia thing is sort of an extension of the whole point of our podcast. This kind of using pop culture to make meaning out of your life.
Mm-hmm. So Jesus was a rebooter.
Yeah.
In a way, right? Taking the familiar. And there was always those stories that he was telling. But what if he was taking stories that were oral tradition and that he was kind of twisting them himself, rebooting them himself? Like, that would be really fascinating.
It is kind of like Midrash, though, right? Like, where you take a familiar story and you look at it from a different angle. Is that the purpose of a reboot? I mean, that's what Creed did.
This is the purpose of a sermon.
Yeah, I mean, I really think it is. I think you take it to a different angle, and when you do it well, it's absolutely bananas. I mean, really, everything's a reboot anyway.
Yeah, is the idea of like nostalgia a cynical process? Like, because it relies on you having good memories. You know, Betsy, you were talking about like relating stuff to your kids. I always remember somebody telling me one time that worked at a Best Buy. They were like, the way that you sell stereos to people is that you kind of figure out their age. And then you play music that would have been popular when they were a senior in high school on the stereo system. And it makes them want to buy the stereo more if they hear
But that. You know, it might be cynical that nostalgia relies on good memories, but it's also privileged, I would say, for that same reason. That like nostalgia for the 50s, for example, happy days. The 50s was not a good time for most of us.
Yeah.
Like, don't want to go back there. And I think we can probably say that about the 90s as well, that it's a very privileged, like, socioeconomically, you know, higher white, male, straight, cis, whatever. Like, those were good times. Good times for you guys. But so you may not, as other populations, you know, other groups of people may not want to be nostalgic for the same things. And then you have this weird backlash where some of these reboots cast women in men's roles, like how shocking, or people of color in white roles. And then people flip out and like are all racist on Twitter. Like, how dare you turn my white memories into something different? Like, that's so bizarre.
Well, and the ownership that you have of things, like that I think we've talked about it before, like that's happening in comics. Like the new Captain America is Sam Wilson, who used to be the Falcon. The new Thor is Jane Foster, right? It's like Miles Morales is the new Spider-Man. All of these characters have moved on to like, you know, more diverse, more culturally diverse, like, demographics, and yet like the movies have to be white people because otherwise there's like backlash.
There's, right?
backlash. There's this fear from the studio that like if Peter Parker isn't Spider-Man, then no one's gonna go see Civil War. That's ridiculous. Like,
right.
That's ridiculous. But
right, it's this idea of ownership, and like, you know, the truth is that Star Wars it's not owned by straight white boys, and neither is Ghostbusters. You don't own that property, but that seemed to be the reaction.
Well, and also, Greg and I had mentioned earlier that Ta-Nehisi Coates has written the new Black Panther.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, in your nostalgia thing, like our theme for our winter carnival dance last, like January, February, whenever it was, you know, kind of a dance that we put in the middle of the week and things are getting slow here at boarding school. We got to do something, was the 60s. And so it was, they announced it's like, it's going to be the 60s. And none of these children, you know, their parents, like maybe, I mean, that they were born in the 60s. They were children. It's not like these are like the children of hippies. You know, they may be the grandchildren of hippies, but like little girl in my advisory at the table who's from Beijing looked around. She's like, what?
Yeah, the 60s were not great in Beijing.
What? And then so on the night you had the kids in kind of the standard issue hippie fare. And then you had, you know, a whole group of African American students or black students dressed as with huge afros, Black Panther get up, which was really interesting. And then you had this one lovely boy from China who was dressed in a black winter overcoat and the black winter hat with the flaps on the side and was carrying around a little red Mao book. And
oh my God.
Oh, snap.
I'm like, that is 1960s China though. Like, yeah, I said, your authenticity here is so good. And it also reminds us, especially when we have a community that has different memories, you know, I always have to remind our students that we are an international community, that we are not just, you can't just say, you know, the theme for the next game is America, you know, and it's like, you know, huge chunk of the population is like, great. Like, what do I do? Right. So
I think it works out if we're just asking ourselves, so why are we nostalgic about this? You know, what is it about this that we're nostalgic for? And that we're open to having different experiences about it. I think that what gets really hard is when someone is holding on to some idea that, you know, this time was better or this situation was better. And that renders them totally incapable of hearing, you know, what someone else's experience was like. And so, you know, it might be really neat for us to, you know, next time we're in situations where people are talking about the good old days, you know, whatever that means, that we sort of say, yeah, well, you know, why does that feel really good to you? And at least if we personalize it, and if we own sort of our own feelings about it, then we're no longer talking in absolutes, that this is better for everybody. And then we can just have our feelings and own them, and other people can their own.
Mm-hmm. Well, not shaming other people. Oh, well, you shouldn't have loved that time because this was right. To this person, this is that, you know, that it's the whole thing that we've really worked to coach each other in this kind of high stakes political time where the things are really heated and we're making, you know, America great again or what, you know, whatever that means, right? But that to get to the biography behind the ideology or behind that statement of this time was really great. Well, yeah, what was yours? What was life like for you then? You know, because Lord only knows what's happened to that person since then.
Yeah.
That felt great. It could be something very personal as opposed to something wider and cultural.
You know, when it comes to the parish context, it always feels like the nostalgia stuff has to do with sort of personal youth and vitality, and that gets transferred on to the institution. So, you know, as the director of children and youth ministries, the thing that I always have to hear is, well, we used to have full Sunday school classrooms, right? Like there used to be kids just overflowing on the Sunday school hall. And why can't we get back to those days where we have just rampant number of kids around here? And I'm like, you know, I don't know that we ever really did. Like, I look at old pictures of this place. It looks like we have just as many kids now as we did then. I think maybe you're just remembering it differently. Like, you remember a time when you were young and happy, and you think that everything was so much better.
Yeah, I've watched institutions get kind of, you watch it when they invite back a rector two times ago. You know, somebody who might have been, who's now still alive, even after, you know, you've had like a long person between, and you have a new person. But maybe somebody who was young like they were at the time. And mm-hmm. And there's something that just felt so alive about that when you're like growing up and being young adults together and having kids together and people who are in the same demographics with that person. There's a real latching on that can happen. and the kind of, you know, the I watched this one parish and the procession's happening and people just kind of, there he is, you know, just kind of hands to the chest and oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
It's just like old times. And I was like, wow, I just like glimpsed like a DNA strand rotating in the middle of this parish about this particular person. And that we can do that too, that it isn't, it's who we were at the time. And I want that again. And whatever that possibility was and however infinite things seemed and this, the struggles I have inside myself now, I can kind of cast that off and do something else and remember a different time.
Yeah. I think that the side of that, you know, the dark side of Fuller House is that when you watch it, you realize how lame Full House used to be. You know, it's like the appeal is really just the title, you know? And it's like, I think the flip side of that sometimes is that you see the old clergy and you're like, oh yeah, we're actually doing better now maybe than we were. Like, you know, it's this idea of we've moved on. I'm just thinking about like my parents' church. It's funny when you grow up in a church as a kid, you identify that as like your home church. And my parents, the church where they grew up, they outgrew their church. And so they ended up selling their church building. Oh, so wow. They have like this brand new sort of state of the art building. And so, you know, if I were to ever go visit them, I have no ties to that building. So I have no nostalgia when it comes to like church buildings from my youth or anything like that, because that building's gone. And I think that that's actually kind of good because it allows you to have new visions of what church could be rather than holding on to that one image of when you were a kid and thinking, oh, well, that's church. It's like what I grew up with.
We used to stay up all night sometime while our people getting high. We would cry and just to get by had to turn to the life of crime to survive. We used to stay up all night sometime while our people getting high. We would cry and just to get by had to turn to the light. I miss you more than ever, despite the pain. Still it's hard to put it all together. Your life was claimed, feels like a dream. I'd have never thought you'd be the first to go. Never felt your pain, cause you kept your life so personal. And even though you gone, we overwhelmed Jamel with love like he was a newborn. Never let him stay outside too late or even too long. Could never understand the pain we felt to have to move on.
And everybody, what you want to talk about, because I do have something that I want to talk about. Hey, Edwin, where are you? What are you doing? And how can people get in touch with you? Do you have like a church website or anything that you want to plug?
Yeah. So I'm in Boston in the neighborhood of Dorchester, and we're killing it at St. Mary's. You could peep us at ST Mary's, MARYS, Dorchester, DORCHESTER.org. And you can also follow me on Twitter at my handle's Padre Edwin with two E's in the middle. We're getting down. Also have a YouTube and some other things. So yeah, you can find it all pretty much through my Twitter or through the St. Mary's website. And just want to throw in a plug for all my peeps out there who are making things happen, who are remixing, because I love it.
Nice. Liz, Betsy, do you guys want to do your things, or have we done all enough?
I always want to do my things.
Okay, Liz, where are you? What are you doing? How can people get in touch with you?
I live in Omaha, Nebraska. I'm the canon to the ordinary of the Diocese of Nebraska. And you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Liz East. It's probably the best way to see what I'm up to. Yesterday was Social Media Sunday. In real life, not when you heard this, in real life. So I really tried this year. I tried to do some like photojournalism more of I happened to be driving all the way across the state of Nebraska that day. So anyway, it's stuff like that.
Nice. Betsy, what are you up to? Are you surviving
the school year? Greg, we gotta get deeper into the school year, man. It's crazy. I am the serving as the head chaplain at the Episcopal High School in Alexandria, Virginia. And I go a little dark on the social media when the school year hits. I haven't quite figured out how to do that balance in life while like keeping my family fed and then keeping my sanity. So, you know, I pop up for events. I'm an event Twitterer at Betsy. Yeah.
We missed you on the Emmys though.
Yeah, we just missed you. What happened? You had some other thing?
I was watching Tape Delayed with my downstairs neighbor.
My name's Greg. I'm in the, where am I?
I'm at Bethesda by the Sea.
Yeah. Episcopal Church in Palm Beach, Florida, where I'm the director of children and youth ministries. You can find us on the web at bbts.org. And you can find me on Twitter at ThatGregKnight, where I got to tell you guys, like, so I tweeted about this because I love it so much. There was this baseball player who played for the Florida Marlins, the Miami Marlins, down here, Jose Fernandez, and he died in a boating accident.
That was awful.
And it was awful. It's horrible. They recently just played their first game, having lost their teammate, and the very first batter got up, and they did kind of like a ceremonial first pitch. And then two pitches later, the leadoff batter hit his very first home run of the season and was bawling as he was running around the bases, and then like gets back to home plate and he's like embraced by all of his teammates, and everyone in the stands is like standing up and applauding. It just makes me think that, like, you know, sports is what it is. Like, you know, there are some people that love it, there are some people that hate it, but the thing that makes it amazing entertainment is that it's unscripted. Like, that's the whole point of it, mm-hmm. is that it's unscripted. And the fact that you have moments like this in an unscripted setting, it just makes it that much more powerful. I think I loved it. I've watched that clip like 20 times now tonight, and it makes me tear up every time. I think it's incredible.
Wow.
Anyway, so you can find Poppin' Collars on Twitter at Poppin' Collars. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Poppin' Collars, where you can like us. You can find our website at poppincollarspodcast.com, where all of our shows are archived. Our newest shows are available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, soon to be Spotify. We do have a Spotify playlist, I will say. So all of the songs that we play in our musical interlude, all of the ones that I can find anyway, are available on a Spotify playlist if you want to listen to any more of them. And we are featured on EpiscopalCafe.com each and every time. We love EpiscopalCafe.com. We know you will as well. Check them out for all your Episcopal news needs and beyond. And check out all of the other podcasts that are featured on Episcopal Cafe too. Priest Pulse, Too Feminist Annotate the Bible, and From All Points. They're really great shows, and we hope that you will listen to them as well. And with that, that is Poppin' Collars for this time. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Edwin. Thank you, Liz, for coming on the show. We will see you next time.
Keep those collars popped.